Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, as is Alex DiVincenzo of Broke Horror Fan. We are discussing the Dark Half movie today. I have already discussed the book, so I will link to that episode as well for anyone who is interested or goes back and reads the book after listening to this episode. But Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. Are you ready to talk about the Dark Half?
I am so ready.
Well, why don't we go ahead and just jump right in then? So for anyone who doesn't know, this story surrounds an author whose fictional alter ego wants to take over his life. And there's some weird, like, science fiction-y aspect to this, I guess you could say, because it turns out that this alter ego is a twin that grew inside of him and had to be removed surgically in his teen years. And it's just a wild, wild story. But a lot of it, I think, reflects the fact that Stephen King wrote as Richard Bachman for quite some time. And he wrote different kinds of stories as Richard Bachman. Maybe looking back now, we can recognize them as King stories because we know it. But at the time, it was sort of this revelation to people. They were like, oh, these are kind of darker and grittier stories. And that's saying a lot for Stephen King.
And it's interesting because I feel like even if Stephen King wasn't such like a, you know, a well-known persona, I mean, it would be obvious that a lot of his characters are semi-autobiographical because he's always writing about struggling writers and, yeah, and addiction. And I guess this was the last book he wrote before becoming sober. And I think that's interesting because it's kind of reflected in the struggle between the two characters.
Yeah, it was during that era where he was coked out and everything like that, as far as the novel goes. And I think that reflects in the personalities of a lot of characters he wrote during that time frame. And then he comes back and writes something like Needful Things, which is an ensemble book, much like It. And you can tell that he's kind of dealing with the sobriety because in that novel, he writes about a character who is a drug dealer. And so he's writing about cocaine, probably while having withdrawals from it still a little bit, at least in his mind. And his tendency to write characters like that, I think, helps a lot of his stories because you know that he understands where these characters are coming from. He just puts a twist on them that isn't all that realistic. And, you know, there are plenty of cases where there have been twins attached at the hips or something like that. So this scenario isn't too far off from something that could actually happen. And I think that's what helps sort of ground the story and you really attach yourself to Thad Beaumont. And I want to dive into the cast here because I think they did manage to put together a pretty good cast. You have Timothy Hutton in the lead. You have Amy Madigan playing his wife, Liz, Michael Rooker as Sheriff Pangborn. And, you know, now that I've seen Henry, where he plays a serial killer, I was like, wow, that is a drastic role change for him.
Yeah, he's like an underrated character actor. Well, I feel like now he's finally getting his due because he did The Walking Dead and then Guardians of the Galaxy. But for a long time, he was just like this super underappreciated character actor. But obviously, if you've seen Henry, you see what he's capable of. And he's really good in the sheriff role, too. Like you said, very different for him, but he's good.
Yeah, and I happen to have just recently watched Henry. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, same time period. I believe Henry came out in 1990, and this came out not too long after that. And, you know, this is a very, very 90s movie, that's for sure. But having George Romero direct it, I feel like that sort of leveled it up a little, but by the end of it, I still felt like somehow the cast did not live up to its potential. And I don't know if that's just the nature of King's story. And there are some differences, but they aren't major ones, at least until the end, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, Romero kind of steadily went downhill after Day of the Dead. It was cool to see him do another Romero story. Obviously, he did Creepshow, which was a lot of fun, but this was an entirely different beast. But I don't know what it boils down to. I liked the movie, but it's certainly not one of the best Romero movies and not one of the best King adaptations. But the cast was really good. Timothy Hutton, I thought, was really good in both roles.
I read that Timothy Hutton actually went method for this and asked for two trailers and two hotel rooms so that when he was doing his scenes as Thad, he could have one area and then he could have like a George Stark area when he was playing that character. And I just thought that was such an interesting fact because I've always heard about actors who go method and I didn't really realize that Timothy Hutton did that. But now that I know that, kind of looking back on the movie, I was like, I could see that because these characters are similar, but so drastically different in how they go about things to the point where you're like, are we sure this alter ego came from this guy?
Yeah, no, that is super interesting. And it does make sense. I mean, I guess whatever it takes to get it right on screen, but I think he did. Like you said, you can tell, you know, they're not trying to hide they're the same actor. In fact, quite the opposite. But they do seem to have two distinct personalities.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It struck me as odd because it's almost like the setup of the story when he's first being implicated for the early murders. It's like, does he have some kind of like dissociative personality disorder or is someone like framing him? Like that seems to be like what the characters are thinking. But we as the viewer see in like the prologue that we already know he had a twin or like a tumor that was once a twin.
Yeah.
So it's like, obviously, as the viewer, we kind of know. And I almost wish they didn't include that because I feel like it would have added a little bit more to suspense and made the twist a little more shocking, I guess.
Yeah. And you do get all of those facts in the book as well. But I think for the big screen, it would have made more sense to maybe spring that on you midway through the movie. You know?
Yeah.
I think there's a moment in the book where Sheriff Pangborn goes back to the doctor. So maybe we just skip to that part where Thad is telling him about this thing that happened to him when he was younger and Pangborn goes and looks into it. And then you get that surgery scene there instead. And you're like, oh, okay,
right.
That changes that everything. But because, you know, that's given to us right from the start, practically, you're like, yeah, I already know.
This, yeah,
you
exactly.
know, this isn't that exciting for us, but to still watch Michael Rooker's performance as Pangborn as he works his way through it, I think was fairly effective, but again, would have been a little more effective had they held that twist a little longer for the movie, because Stephen King gives you a lot of information in his books, even his shorter books. And I think The Dark Half was one of his books that probably could have been a little shorter. And, you know, he probably has a lot of those because I know I still have a lot of lengthy books coming up. And it'll be interesting to see how those compare to some of his shorter to more mid-length novels, for him anyway. And I would put The Dark Half sort of in that mid-length novel. But you have these characters who kind of know what's going on, and you're just kind of waiting for Pangborn to be ready to believe it. You know, he's like, I don't really see this guy as a killer. He's a college professor, writer, and I don't think he could do this to people, but something weird is going on here. And you have the character Fred Clausen, played by Robert Joy, too, who is blackmailing Thad. So that's sort of what starts everything, too, is that photo shoot where they bury George Stark. So you have all of this tension building up because you're waiting for Pangborn to figure things out. You're kind of wondering what is going to happen in the end. But since I had read the book, I kind of already knew. And
yeah.
I feel like there was just something missing out of this adaptation. And you mentioned that Romero was sort of on the decline. And sadly, this was the first Stephen King thing he did, because he was initially tied to Pet Sematary. He was tied to the It miniseries, but for whatever reason, those things didn't work out. And I was excited when I saw his name attached to this, and then I saw that it was 2 hours long, and I was like, uh-oh. You know?
Well, he had done Creepshow, but obviously that's short stories, that's an anthology. And
right.
I think it worked, it's better for it. But yeah, I mean, even Romero's good movies, like, I mean, Dawn of the Dead is one of my favorite movies, but it probably runs a little longer than it needs to.
Yeah. I meant this was like his first feature-length
right.
thing that wasn't an anthology. At least that's what I had read somewhere.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Robert Joy, because he's another like just fantastic character actor that you don't see enough of.
Yeah.
And he kind of like makes the most out of his little part. He later had a more memorable role in Romero's Land of the Dead. And he's also one of the mutants in the Hills Have Eyes remake.
Okay.
But yeah, I think he's like just like a fun cast. And like, I mean, Romero is so good at, that's one of his strengths is casting, I think. Like, well, so you mentioned Pangborn, kind of like he never wanted to believe that Thad was guilty for whatever reason. And like, he's kind of a terrible cop if you look at it objectively.
Yeah.
There's all this evidence pointing, you know, catching him red-handed practically. Like, he finds his bloody fingerprints in the blood of the dead guy belonging to Thad, and he just doesn't arrest him. He's like, you know what, I don't really believe that's true, so we're just going to keep looking into it.
Yeah, and I think some of it had to do with the fact that he kept alibying out. People were like, no, he was here, and, you know, even though he left it this time, there's no way he could have gone and done this, because this is taking place in Ludlow, which is where Pet Sematary takes place, and the crimes are happening in Castle Rock, which is why Pangborn is coming down, because he's the sheriff of Castle Rock. And you have a lot of these connections coming together with the Stephen King universe in general, because, you know, I mentioned Needful Things earlier. Pangborn shows up in that novel as well and is very prominent in that, like he is in this. So you have Castle Rock, Ludlow, these places we're familiar with, and they all tie together in this bizarre story. And then, you know, they throw New York in there because that's where the publishers are, and you kind of have to do that. But at the same time, it's just diving into the lore, and I kind of didn't feel that quite as much in the movie as I was hoping. It's like, okay, they gave us Pangborn. That kind of felt like it was it.
Yeah, I think audiences or readers as well weren't quite as savvy back then. I mean, Stephen King, he was obviously already a household name, but I feel like at that point, maybe the average person wasn't as aware of his kind of interconnected universe of characters the way they are now. So I feel like it almost would have felt not necessarily out of place if you're a reader, but like might have felt confusing to the average person. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it just never really felt 100% clear that Pangborn was coming and going from Castle Rock almost.
Right,
it just seemed like he was the local cop in town sort of thing, because of how well he seemed to know Thad, or thought he knew Thad anyway. And I was just like, okay, I guess maybe Ludlow's close enough. It was one of those things where I was like, diving into this a little more would have been nice, but it's not the end of the world. And I think where I had an issue with the story was more so the ending, because we do get a little more with the book after that big final scene. And I understand why they ended it that way, because it's a much more cinematic ending, but it almost felt like something was missing, because I was like, wait, the credits started rolling? All of that, and that's where you're going to end it? And the movie was so long that it felt like it was dragging at times, and then you get to this big climactic scene, and then it just ends. And I was like, oh, that's a weird place to put the climax and the ending.
And, like, not a particularly exciting... Like, I bet on the page that ending read really exciting, but, like, because it's like really bad digitally composited birds flying around everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like they all have like a green glow around them from green screen or whatever. It's just, it doesn't play too well.
Yeah. Speaking of the effects though, I do think some of the practical effects were done really well. And that was something that was high on my list to pay attention for, because of the fact that it was a Romero film. And just before that scene ends, you have the birds picking away at George Stark, and he becomes a skeleton. And I thought that was pretty well done. Like, that still looked disgusting today.
Yes. Yeah. The practical effects did hold up really well. And honestly, even the few scenes that the two Timothy Hutton characters share together, when Thad and George Stark are in the same scene, like those look pretty well for what they are. It was just they couldn't nail those birds back then, I guess, in 1993.
Yeah, and I think that might have been a little harder because of how much movement there was with them. You know, absolutely, they're going around frantically, hitting everything, and, you know, they're just busting through walls, and you're like, wow, this is bad. But I'm kind of entertained with this, at least, because I did think that end scene was one of the most entertaining pieces of the movie. And I think that is just because I felt like a lot of the stuff that came before it really dragged on. I don't think this was a very well-paced movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think you probably could have cut some fluff here and there. Probably had a movie that ran 15 minutes shorter and bid better for it.
Yeah, I saw the runtime and I was like, ugh, I don't know about this. I'm not really sure how they managed to drag everything else beforehand and then not have time for what came after that moment sort of thing. And I was just like, okay, that's a decision you made. I see what you did here and why, but I'm not sure I like it. And I just felt like that was a big part of what was missing from this movie for me. And Stephen King's endings in his novels are frequently discussed. And, you know, obviously I frequently discuss them as well. And some of them are hit or miss for me, but I did like the fact that we did get a little bit more after George Stark was gone with Thad and his family. And it's just one of those things where they've ran out of time, I feel like, and possibly they ran out of the budget.
Yeah, I was reading this was an Orion Pictures release, and it was like supposed to come out, and then it went bankrupt, and it sat on the shelf for 2 years before it got released. So it's very possible they did run into some budgetary issues as well.
Yeah, and that's such a bummer, because you have this great director who probably could have done so much more with a different studio. And I know that maybe some people might have been tired of Stephen King movies in the 90s. There are a lot of bad Stephen King movies in the 90s, if I'm being honest, and this might fall within that category for a lot of people. I think a lot of it had to do with the pacing for me, though. It wasn't necessarily the cast or, you know, how everything meshed together with the characters. It was just one of those things where I couldn't quite pinpoint it, and I think that's because a lot of it had to do with me being bored so early on with it that I kind of like went in and out of paying attention to it.
Yeah, that's, I think it was like, which again is not unlike Romero, just sometimes he's more successful than others. I think it was trying to do like some character development, like just kind of spend time with them doing almost mundane things and kind of get to know their personalities a little bit more. But yeah, it definitely went on a little too long, especially in the first act there. And like I said, where we as the audience kind of already know what the quote-unquote twist is, it was just weird that they spent so much time kind of building it up when it wasn't really a big reveal.
Yeah, especially since we do get that scene that you mentioned earlier, and you're kind of like, all right, cool, you told us what we already knew.
And, yeah.
You know, there wasn't much to be revealed at that point. Because as soon as he gives the description, you're like, yeah, we know, dude, you know? And I think one of the things that seems to also be very prevalent in certain Stephen King stories are the attention to detail when it comes to the cars and the fact that George Stark drove this very specific car. I do like that they left that in from the book because it was so important to the character that you couldn't just change it and get a different car. You know, they had to go out and find that car, which I'm not 100% sure was all that easy to find. I don't think it's a super popular muscle car.
Yeah, that definitely felt like, even if you're unfamiliar with the book, I mean, just seeing that, it feels like kind of classic Stephen King.
Yeah, so I'm going to hand it off to you. Is there anything in particular that you want to discuss about this adaptation? Because I know you haven't read the book, so you're kind of looking at it from a different angle than I am. And I'm definitely interested in what you think of this overall as a Stephen King movie versus, you know, having the knowledge of the book behind it.
Yeah. I don't know. This is my second time watching it, but my first time was years ago, so I didn't remember too much. Didn't quite hold up as well as it did in my memory, to be honest. But I'm curious to check out the book now, just to see what the differences are and see how faithful it was, because I am a big Romero fan, and obviously I love Stephen King. It just didn't strike me as either of their best work. I mean, I can't judge Stephen King on it just because it was his source material, but I will say my one, I don't know if it's even part of the book, because it's like a 3-second shot, but I think the part that stands out most in my head, there's like a dream sequence relatively early on, where Thad sees like this woman, what he thinks is a woman, and she like looks up at him, and then she has a ceramic face, and then it shatters, and there's a skull underneath.
Yeah.
And it, like I said, it's like a 3-second shot. I don't know why. It's just, it stuck with me, but it's just one of those things like, oh, that was like, that was an interesting little visual cue.
Yeah, I don't recall if that was in the book. The book was about 7 books ago for me, so yeah. Details are a little fuzzy by now. But I do think that the book gives you a lot of extra details that make the story more interesting, even though you know from nearly the start that George Stark is this part of Thad. But cinematically, that just doesn't work nearly as well. So I think this is one of those moments where Romero should have taken the liberty to change up the source material to better suit the movie format, because there's a lot of Stephen King's works that I would say are not suited to that. And, you know, it is something that is very different in book format than it is in either the miniseries or this 2-movie format, because
definitely
it's this massive ensemble piece as a book, and you have over 1,000 pages, you know, that's hard to adapt into a miniseries or a 2-part movie series. You know, there's still so much that is going to be left on the cutting room floor. And that's how this kind of felt, even though it took 2 hours to get through it. I was just like, you know, I would have cut some of these things up and maybe don't make Thad's younger years so prominent given the limited time that you have to work with.
Yeah, it almost seems like it would have played better either much shorter, like, no, I shouldn't say much shorter, but 15 minutes shorter or so, or if they gave it like they were doing a lot in the early 90s, like the miniseries treatment, and gave it, you know, 3 hours or whatever.
Yeah, this might have been more suited to the small screen format for sure, just because of how it plays out in the book. And, you know, Timothy Hutton has done TV now, technically. He's done The Haunting of Hill House, so I don't know if he would have still done right. This as, you know, a miniseries, but they did get some fairly big names for the Stephen King miniseries in the 90s. And I think it's something that maybe would have had fewer studio problems. And there isn't really too much gore in this, given the extent that Stark goes and kills people. So maybe that might be an issue, though, are the kills.
Yeah.
But you still have so many things that could have been better with this. I feel bad that you keep coming on for relatively short episodes here, but is there anything else you want to talk about before we dive into some ratings?
No, I don't think so. I would just say if you're a big Stephen King fan and have only seen George Romero's work with King, don't judge him just on this one, because he's made some extremely great movies earlier in his career.
Yeah, go watch other things.
Yeah, even Creepshow.
Yeah, Creepshow, I think it takes that sort of anthology format and has a lot of fun with it. And that's why it works, especially for, you know, that cult horror fan who is going to revisit Creepshow. I don't know if I've ever heard of people being like, yes, I'm going to go revisit The Dark Half tonight.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't quite have the fan base. And when you watch it, it's kind of like, you understand why. And I don't think it's a particularly bad movie. I don't want to sound like that. Even movies we've discussed on here, like, this is probably one of the better ones of the fourth movie we've talked about.
Yeah. I gave it more than 1 star, so that's a plus.
So it's already good. But it's just kind of just middling. Like, you know, there's not enough exciting about it to warrant a recommendation.
Yeah, so on that note, I did end up giving this a 2 out of 5. I probably maybe could have gone 2.5, but I think because I got so bored early on with it, I was just like, all right, come on, I know what we're building to, let's get to it, that I bumped it down that 0.5 star because I was just like, all right, this was too much.
I think I'd go 3, but maybe 2.5.
Okay.
But it might have an effect that I haven't read the book, you know, that I don't have the basis of comparison, which might have swayed me to go a little lower.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, we're not super far off on this or anything. It's just one of those things where I happened to get bored, so then I was kind of like going in and out of paying attention to it. And then I was like, all right, come on, can we hurry up a little? And I feel that way with his books sometimes too, you know, so it's not just the adaptations where that happens to me. And some books are a lot easier for me to get through than others. It really just depends. And this was one of those movies where I was just like, ooh, that was a chore by the end of it. Well, Alex, any final thoughts on this one?
No, I've got nothing. Okay. But Timothy Hutton was pretty awesome. That's all I got to say. Oh, and he was, I don't think we mentioned, he was in Secret Window later, which is a...
Yes.
I would call it a better Stephen King adaptation. I think that movie's pretty good.
Yeah, you definitely have some interesting performances in that one as well. And I'm sure I will be getting to that at some point. It's like, you know, a decade after this or whatever it is. But I think one other thing I want to mention are the roles that the twins play. Just because, you know, they're the whole reason Thad is going to such great lengths. Them and his wife, obviously. He wants to protect them. And I think that Timothy Hutton does a nice job of sort of playing the protective husband and father while also sort of, he feels like he never really has everything under control because he is a little scared of what Stark can do to him, even though he knows Stark technically can't do anything to him physically. So I just like that he has these stakes for the book and the movie.
Yeah, I did like that. I also liked that it was, I mean, I guess twins is a genetic thing, maybe. I actually have no idea if it is, but probably. Maybe. I think it runs the genes. But anyway, like I liked because, you know, the whole conceit of the thing is that these two were whatever these twins or almost twins, whatever they are. And then Thad himself also has the twins and then they become almost like, you know, a bargaining chip or what have you in the finale.
Yeah, it's like the kids are a way more pure version of him and George Stark.
Yeah.
And I think that's something he just really wants to hold on to because he knows he had a twin and things went wrong. But, you know, I think that wraps it up for this episode.
I think so. Unless we can get the twins back and do the Dark Half 2.
That would be something. Certainly would. Maybe Mike Flanagan can take that one on.
Oh, there we go.
Before we go, though, I want to let you all know about our Patreon. You can support the podcast. You can either support for $1 a month and get a thank you on the show, or $2 a month, we'll get you a Chat Cemetery sticker. You can follow us at Chat Cemetery on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find us on Facebook now. And Alex, thank you again for coming on to talk about this one.
Thank you for having me. You can follow Broke Horror Fan on whatever your social media platform of choice is to see me talk about horror movies.
Definitely go do that. And as always, thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.